Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Kilowatt. My name is Bodine. I am your host, and we're going to talk about the Tesla shareholder meeting today, the whole show around it. Oh. But before I go on, many of you out there are like, hey, many of you being the Patreon supporters, you promised a Patreon exclusive video. Where is it at? It didn't show up. Well, after I recorded the last week's episode, because I recorded a little bit early, I got up in the middle of the night to use the restroom. I fell down, smashed my face on a counter, and got a concussion, broke my nose, got some stitches, chipped some teeth. So this last week has been a little bit of a struggle for me mentally. Just to give you an idea, on Monday, I was trying to call people because this whole accident thing happened. And I was entering phone numbers into my calculator on my phone, and I couldn't figure out why things weren't working. I'm much better now, other than a dull ache in my face, especially on my left side below my eye. I'm fine. There's no issues. I don't want your sympathy. I'm just telling you, I have some extenuating circumstances, not the normal excuses as to why I didn't get that Patreon exclusive out. And if you are owed something, Deepak, Chris, I haven't sent it out yet, but I will, hopefully on Saturday. My wife is home all day on Saturday, so hopefully we can get some of these things that I need to get done. All right. Let's see here. Let's pull up my show notes, talked about how I fell on my face, blah, 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 blah. I want to thank all of our Patreon supporters. I actually want to thank John for upping his pledge. Thank you so much, John. Totally unnecessary, but completely appreciated. If you want to join the Patreon group, you can go to patreon.com/kilowatt, or if that's too hard to remember, go to supportkilowatt.com and you can support the show. The money that is generated through the Patreon, none of that goes into my own pocket. All of the money goes back into the show. Like, I'd like to go to the LA Auto Show this year. I'd like to get a new preamp because I realize that a lot of you have noticed that it's difficult to hear me and you have to turn the podcast all the way up. That's because the preamp that I use is not powerful enough to power the microphone that I use. So I just need to get a new one of those, but they're about $500. And the software that we use to record the show, that's also expensive. It's on a subscription. It's about $90 every 6 months. And all the other stuff that goes with that, hosting and blah, blah, blah. So all of that Patreon money goes right back into the show. None of it goes into my own pocket. And I can't see a future, unless this podcast gets enormous, where it will ever go into my pocket. I'm not looking to make money. All I'm doing is looking for a little help running the show. All right. So go to patreon.com/kilowatt if you want to help. All right. Let's start with the show. Let me pull up my show notes again. All right. I heavily edited this Tesla shareholders meeting. I heavily edited the clips. I tried to take out a lot of the ums and ahs that Elon says to make them shorter, and the pauses, because that actually removes quite a bit of time from these clips. That also took quite a bit of time. But I tried to make everything I tried not to mess with the message. I wanted to make sure that the message gets through and how it's conveyed. So if somebody stammers when they talk, but it's important to the message when they're stammering. I just left that stuff in there versus if there's just a bunch of and ahs and long pauses in between comments, then I took all that stuff out so that it's just easier to listen to and it's shorter clip wise. So without further ado, let's jump into our first clip. I know a lot of you who listen to the show are Tesla shareholders. So see our chairman, Robin Denholm, she gave a little thank you to the Tesla shareholders. So I want to play that right now.
I would like to start today's meeting by thanking you, our investors, our shareholders, for the tremendous support that you've given Tesla, not just over the last 12 months, but also over the last many years. Without you, the progress that we're making as a company towards the mission of moving the world towards sustainable energy would not have happened. When you're changing the world and many industries in the process, you need to have a certain amount of intestinal fortitude as an investor. And when I speak to many of you, our shareholders, you have that in spades. So thank you.
One of the things that I like about Tesla is the upper echelon folks do seem, and it's a big seem because I don't know any of these people, they seem to really care about their customers. They care about their shareholders. They say they care about their employees. And, you know, on one side, I do believe that they do. However, there's the business side and there's the humanity side. And sometimes those two things don't always coincide. But this thank you from Ms. Denholm seems to be very genuine. And that was nice to hear, even though it was a shareholders meeting and probably expected. So now we're going to hear Elon just talk a little bit about the Model 3.
It's been, you know, a hell of a year, but a lot of good things are happening, and I think it's worth going over those things. Model 3, last four quarters, is actually outselling all competitors combined in the U.S. It's the highest revenue car in the U.S. and best-in-class performance, and it's actually the best-selling car by revenue of including high-volume cars like the Toyota Camry and Honda Accord. Yeah, I think most people aren't aware of this. We're about the fourth best-selling by numbers, but the highest-selling by revenue over the past year of any car in the U.S. That's remarkable that an electric vehicle is the best-selling, the highest-revenue car in the country. I think 10 years ago, nobody would have believed it. Thanks to the hard work of the Tesla team, this is a result. It's great. And as I said, in class, the Model 3 is outselling the Mercedes C-Class, the BMW 3 Series, the Audi A4 S4, and the Lexus combined. That's in units. The difference is higher in dollars.
We all know that the Model 3 is a big hit, but honestly, hearing Elon say it and all of the achievements, it's really amazing what Tesla's done with this car. And especially when you think about the Model Y is going to be so much bigger than the Model 3. So it'll be interesting when that comes out. And we'll hear more about the Model Y as the shareholder meeting continues. Right now, we're going to hear Elon give a similar update with the Model S. You know what? Before I do that, you'll kind of hear some clapping and then it gets muted really quick. I cut those sections down. I left the clapping in so you know that somebody was applauding, but I cut it down because, you know, again, it happened so much in the shareholders meeting that it probably cut minutes out of this whole podcast, just the applause. So just FYI, if that sounds weird or muted, like there wasn't any enthusiasm in the crowd, that's not really what happened. All right, moving on to the Model S.
The new Model S is a 370-mile range. You can go, we actually did this with the Motor Trend. They drove nonstop from the Bay Area to LA. So it was, admittedly, that was downhill, sort of. Not really. It feels downhill, but it's not. But on a single charge, to go from the Bay Area to LA is pretty wild for any car, and especially a full-size sedan. It's worth noting that no electric car has exceeded the range of the first Model S that we came out with in 2012. So, resisting the temptation to pick on competitors, I will not do that. It's a testament to the Tesla engineering team to be able to have made a car 7 years ago that has still not been exceeded in range, and now to have a car that's 370 miles with steady improvements that are likely to occur over the next few years. It won't be long before we have a 400-mile range car.
Not anything really new and exciting in this clip, other than, again, it's nice to hear Elon say it out loud and just kind of give a little bit more context to the achievements. And that last little bit that Elon said about having a car with a 400-mile range, I wonder if he's referencing either the Model Y, because he said before that the Model Y could have a lower drag coefficient than the Model 3, or if he's talking about a redesigned Model S, because we already know the Roadster is going to hit that range, but the Roadster is a while off. And he said soon, and we're looking at somewhere between September and November for a Model S redesign in X. The X probably won't hit it this year, 400 miles, but it is interesting. You just kind of put that in there. So I think that's a little Easter egg. Moving on, in this next clip, Elon's going to address the question, is Tesla having a demand problem?
So we get this question a lot. I want to be clear, there is not a demand problem. Okay. Sales have far exceeded production, and production's been pretty good. We're actually doing well, and we have a decent shot at a record quarter on every level. If not, it's going to be very close, but we've got a shot at a record quarter. And 90% of orders are coming from non-reservation holders, so these are our new customers.
I've said this several times on the podcast, but I think it bears worth mentioning. Tesla has a delivery problem, and I think a lot of people in the media are getting that confused with, or purposely twisting it with, Tesla can't sell cars. And really, is the reality is Tesla can't deliver cars. All right, let's talk about Model 3 trade-ins. What kind of vehicles are people giving up to get this amazing electric car, the Model 3? Let's listen.
Model 3 market potential, when we see trade-ins, 63% of the trade-ins are non-premium cars, which means people are trading up to buy to a Model 3. 12% are mid-sized sedans, 25% other premium vehicles. But it's just interesting that a supermajority, essentially, of the cars that are being traded in are non-premium. So it's just, this is a lot of potential.
Honestly, I think this compares really well to the iPhone. So when the iPhone came out, everybody had a flip phone or a kind of a smartphone. It wasn't really smart. It did a lot of things that a flip phone didn't do, but the iPhone did so much more. I also know that it was also limited. So bear with me in my analogy here. But people were like, I am not going to spend that much money on a phone. I'll never use the features. And now you look around and everybody has a smartphone, whether it's an iPhone or it's an Android or whatever. It was the iPhone was the catalyst to get us to where we are today in terms of smartphones. And the Model 3 is going to be the catalyst to get us to where we are 10, 12 years from now for electric cars. All right, let's talk about the Model 3 cost of ownership, or let's let Elon talk about the Model 3 cost of ownership.
When people look at total cost of ownership, the actual total cost of ownership, because electricity is so much cheaper than gasoline and the maintenance costs are much less, you don't need an oil change or filter change. You basically never need to change the brake pads because of regenerative braking. The actual operating costs of an electric car are much less than a gasoline car. And so it takes a while to educate people on this, because the easiest thing to look at is just the lease price or the purchase price. When factoring in fuel and maintenance, it's actually buying Model 3 is like buying a Camry or an Accord.
Okay, so that might be true over the long term. However, when you go out and buy a new Camry or an Accord, you have a warranty. You're not going to be replacing your brakes right away. You probably got a few oil changes for free from the dealership. So your overall cost of that car initially is just going to be the payment and putting gas in it. With an electric car, and we'll just use the Model 3 for an example, you're paying that cost up front. So that's going to be more money out of your pocket during the life of that loan or that lease, which can be a significant amount of money and should not be discounted. All right. So this is going to be a little bit longer clip, but Elon's going to talk about autonomy.
The autonomy investor day that I think was well received. The Tesla full self-driving computer is literally 20 times faster or 21 times faster than the NVIDIA system that it replaces. We expect to be feature complete with autonomy by the end of this year. You know, you'll still need to supervise the autonomy, but it should be able to go from your garage to your parking space at work without intervention. Then we'll put on billions of miles of testing, and then I think probably sometime next year you'll be able to have the car be autonomous without supervision, and then sometime thereafter we'll be able to convince regulators that the autonomy is safe enough that the car could actually go around with no one in it. And it's really the critical elements for that are having billions of miles of testing, ultimately tens of billions of miles. So having a huge fleet, having a very powerful AI inference engine, and that's the Tesla full self-driving computer, and then having the sensors in the car that are necessary for the car to drive, like being cameras in all directions, radar, ultrasonics, a good IMU, GPS, that kind of thing. I think we've laid the groundwork here for a fleet that essentially every car made since October 16 is capable of full autonomy, in our view, with a replacement of the computer alone. So you just need to switch out the computer. Like a lot of people were puzzled as to how could I say that we would have like a million robo-taxis by the end of next year. And it's if you sum up the vehicles made since October 16 and essentially switch out the computers for the ones that were made after the full self-driving computer a few months ago, we will have a million cars that are capable of self-driving. We'll still need regulatory approval, but the capability will be there. This massively increases the value of the car. In fact, I think it's basically financially insane to buy anything except an electric car that is upgradable to autonomy. It's just nuts. You can see one country after another is putting dates on banning gasoline and diesel cars. The environmental pressure to move away from fossil fuels is getting stronger and stronger. So it's just basically mad to buy a fossil fuel powered car at this point, because its long-term resale value will be less and less. It's also important to buy a car that is upgradable at least to full self-driving, because a car that cannot do self-driving will also be not worth not very much. You know, I've made this comment before, but like essentially, if you buy a gasoline car that's not full self-driving, this is like riding a horse and using a flip phone. It takes us a bit of time to educate consumers about this, but I think people are starting to get it. And like, you know, a car is a major investment for most people. It's often their most valuable asset. And if you're going to make a choice about your most valuable asset, you want to look towards the future and say, where are we headed? Clearly, we're headed towards electrification. Clearly, we're headed towards autonomy. And so that's the kind of car you want to get. So I think this is, people are starting to realize this.
I choose to have a healthy skepticism on autonomous driving. I do think it's the future. I do think that we're going to get there sooner than a lot of people think, mostly because Tesla's pushing this forward. And, you know, you have Waymo and Uber's getting back into the self-driving cars. And all these other companies that are out there doing it, there's Aurora and a bunch of other companies doing it as well. Rivian's got their version. So I think we're going to get there. Let's get an update on the Model Y, shall we?
Then with Model Y, this is the biggest segment of vehicles in the world is the midsize SUV. It's 2.5 times bigger than the Model 3 market. And so we think probably demand for the Model Y will be greater than the S3 and X combined. We put a lot of effort into the efficiency of the car, getting an incredibly low drag coefficient. And I think we might be able to get the drag coefficient actually lower than the 3, which will be is quite unusual. And the car has a lot of room inside. I think like a good sense of design or a good design principle is if the car looks bigger, it feels bigger on the inside than it looks on the outside. That is a that is a good design. So this car is actually quite big on the inside. And then we expect to hit volume production towards the end of next year. Internally, we're aiming for sooner than that, but we want to have some margin on that timing.
I think this is great news. The Model Y is coming out much faster than I actually thought it would. But I say, please, please, please take your time, get everything set up right. Not necessarily for customers, but don't give fodder to the people who hate Tesla and come out with the Model Y and then have a whole bunch of production problems like the Model 3. I would really like the rollout of the Model Y to be as perfect as possible. Okay, let's talk about Gigafactory 1. This is going to be a little bit longer of a clip, but it goes into a nice little history of Gigafactory 1, and I thought it was worth keeping in.
Yeah, I think it'd be good to maybe you talk about the Gigafactory. And I remember when we were like doing the calculations for battery capacity, and we're like, we need more batteries than all of Earth is currently producing. So it's unless we build this thing, it's not going to happen. Maybe you tell the story.
Sure. Well, yeah. Good to see everyone. Hello. Yeah, it was a pretty crazy story, and Elon and I were just talking about it recently, and it's sort of amazing how some really simple kind of napkin math could lead to such a kind of outrageous, result. I mean, as you just said, we basically did the quick math and looked at, okay, we're going to build, so many 100,000 cars per year and this many kilowatt hours per car, therefore, 35 gigawatt hours of cells per year. Well, that's a huge number, and it was actually more than the entire world was producing for all applications, cell phones, computers, cars, everything, just a few years before that. So, that was what kind of shocked us and said, wow, we this isn't going to work unless we build an entire new facility to solve this ourselves.
Yeah, if we're probably not going to get all the battery factories in the world, so therefore we better build this. Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing is this was basically, I think, five slides. We showed a picture of a factory in the hills and said to investors, we need money to build this thing. And they gave us the money, which was cool. And
we built it.
Yeah, we built it.
And it happened.
There it is, right there. It's really giant, and it's getting bigger. We have about 35 gigawatt hours of capacity potential at Giga right now, and then we're about sort of 70 or 80% of that capacity has been realized. Like, I think there was a bit of confusion earlier this year because Panasonic said there was 35, and there's technically yes, but it's not 35 at max capacity yet. But it will be, probably, end of this year or next, or early next. It's also lowest cost per kilowatt hour. It's half of all global EV battery production. So if you add up all the EVs, all electric vehicles in the world, all the batteries that they use, that's approximately equal to what we make at the Gigafactory.
And maybe just a quick shout out to the whole team out there and the team that's made that happen. I mean, it's been such an epic project. I mean, as you said, starting with dirt, literally dirt in the desert, to now the biggest battery factory in the world. And it took thousands and thousands of people to do it. Kevin had a huge part in that sitting there. It's pretty amazing watching that happen. And I feel super proud to be part of that team.
There's no doubt what Tesla did with Gigafactory 1 is pretty amazing. They do a lot of stuff there, and it's a large building, and it produces a lot of batteries. Now, Elon's going to give us an update on the Gigafactory in China.
We're making good progress on the Gigafactory in Shanghai. If you've watched the progress online, it gets followed with an excruciating detail. I think the number of drones flying over the factory is pretty nutty. We need air traffic control, but the shell of the building is basically done at this point. It's the fastest large factory construction that I've ever seen, and maybe there's something faster, but I'm not aware of it because it was amazing. And we're already installing a lot of the factory equipment, the stamping machines. We'll begin installing the paint shop and battery module lines and that kind of thing. So this will be obviously extremely important to our future because China is the largest electric car market in the world. And to date, we have had to pay import duties, sometimes quite significant ones, ranging from 15 to 40%. And we did not have access to local incentives because those are only if you make the car in China. Now that the local incentives are going away, I think approximately when our factory starts. I think this is a coincidence, but at least we will not have the cost of the import duties, and it will cost less to make the car in China, so we'll be able to have a more affordable car for the China market. So this is extremely important to Tesla's future.
One of the things that I liked in that clip is Elon didn't seem to mind that there were drones flying over the Gigafactory. He thought that it seemed like he just kind of was, it was very amused that it's happening. So that's awesome. I think that's great. In terms of the Gigafactory starting actual production of cars, it kind of sounds like I'm going to have to eat some crow on this, because I didn't think they would get very many cars out before the end of the year, maybe a couple, and then they'd really start ramping up production in 2020. It really sounds like they're going to have maybe a solid quarter of getting cars produced in that factory. And if they can ramp it up as fast as they say, they could be another great quarter at the end of the year for Tesla. In our next clip, we get a little update on the European Gigafactory and where that's at status-wise.
And it obviously makes sense to have a car factory at least on each continent. This is a wise move. We'll continue to expand, I think, our activity in the U.S. Having to not pay tariffs and have a really long delivery chain and high transport costs will make the cars a lot more affordable to people in Europe and in China. Yeah, we're looking forward to making a decision on this, hopefully towards the end of this year.
I'm honestly surprised that they haven't figured out or haven't announced where the Gigafactory in Europe is going to go. But my best guess, it's going to go somewhere around Germany. All right, let's talk about power walls and power packs. This is a pretty short clip.
Tesla Energy, we're looking at probably at least doubling energy storage growth for Powerwall and power pack compared to 2018. Internally, we have a bigger goal than that, but I think we can at least double it. And so it would be at least sort of on the order of 2, maybe approaching 3 gigawatt hours.
I like to hear that they're ramping up production for the Powerwall and PowerPack. I would also like them to get to a point where they could lower the price to something that I would feel comfortable putting on my house. Because right now, according to their estimator, I would need 3. And we're looking, you know, right around $25,000, $26,000 installed, which I'm not going to pay. I might be able to get away with 2, but that's still somewhere around $16,000, $17,000. And that's just a lot of money, to be honest with you. All right. Elon's going to tell us a little bit about how Solar Roof version 3 is doing.
We're installing the Solar Roof in 8 states. We're about to complete version 3 of the Solar Roof. So this is actually quite a hard technology problem to have an integrated solar panel or solar cell with a roof tile and have it look good and last for 30 years. Like, roofs have to last a long time. So the amount of testing that one has to do and do accelerated life testing to say, how can we predict how this will perform if we just spend 6 months of testing and project that out to 30 years? So it's quite a hard problem. And then making it easy to install, getting the costs low. But I'm really excited about version 3 of Solar Roof. And I don't really overconfident on this, but I think we have a shot at being equal to a comp shingle roof plus someone's utility costs, or being maybe lower than that. So that's like one of the cheapest roofs available. So you can have potentially a great roof with better economics than a normal, fairly cheap roof and your utility bill. So if you can have like basically a better product at a lower price, that is obviously will take off like crazy. So, but it is a hard problem to solve. Like, many other companies have tried to solve this problem and they have not succeeded. I'm feeling pretty good about this. You guys want to say anything about that?
I would just say that the team is super motivated by that goal, and yeah, we think we can achieve it, and we are laser focused on achieving it.
I've had a number of meetings with Drew. We're like, bang the table, damn it, we've got to achieve this.
It can be done.
It can be done.
Intention, intelligence, and invention.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
It is going to happen, and it's going to happen at a cost, a very high cost. For my house to put a solar roof on, it's going to cost, let's see here, I think it was $76,000. I'm 44. For me to live long enough to see that roof pay itself off, or stay in this house long enough for that roof to pay itself off, is not practical. I mean, we're looking at maybe 30-ish years down the road that maybe it's going to pay back. I'll be 76. I might be dead, to be honest with you. 74, 30 years, 44. Not so good at math. Anyway, Elon's going to talk about Supercharger 3 in this next clip. Let's listen.
Version 3 Supercharger. It's actually like the scope of technology that is advancing at Tesla is really massive on many fronts. So as I mentioned, we've got version 3 of the solar roof coming out soon. We've got version 3 of the Supercharger that's being deployed around the world. And this is a 75 miles in 5 minutes capability, 250 kilowatt system. I'm sure a lot of you have used the Superchargers before. And they've typically been anywhere from 75 kilowatts to, if you've used one recently, you might have gotten up to 140 kilowatts. That's the version 2. And then version 3 is 250 kilowatts. And when 250 kilowatts are charging a really efficient car, the miles per minute is super good. And in fact, I think there was recently a test. I'm not sure who it was, but tested like what car could charge the most number of miles in half an hour. It was the Model 3.
One of the things that I hit on a lot on this show is if you take Tesla and you take all the divisions inside of Tesla and then you break them out into their own companies, you're going to have several very successful companies. Now, I realize that Tesla as a whole isn't making money, but just sheer output technology-wise, these companies are successful. You look at autonomy or battery production, you know, the obvious electric cars. One of the things that I fail to mention, and I kick myself every time I use this example, is their charging network. Tesla has an amazing charging network. As long as you own a Tesla car, they have an amazing charging network. And it is like what they're doing with Supercharger 3, and what they're doing with the existing superchargers in terms of pre-warming the battery or preconditioning the battery so you get faster charging times is amazing. And it's moving charging networks forward. Having said all that, let's listen to Elon give us an update on maps and the supercharging network.
And then we'll be publishing new maps for the supercharger deployment. We're finally going to get the Trans-Canada Highway. For example, and then we're going to get Alaska too. This map doesn't even include all of the locations. But the two critical factors we've found for sales in any given region, and they're really obvious actually, are is there a service center within reasonable distance? And are there superchargers on all the routes that you'd like to take? You don't want to have like 80% of the routes, because then like, but what about that one trip that you can't do now? So you really want to have superchargers and service centers are the absolute key to sales. Really, we can map our sales to like basically people are just like sensible. They're like, okay, you need to service your car and you need to be able to travel conveniently on long distance routes. So wherever we've got that, our sales are good. We also have to have good consumer financing and make sure pricing is competitive. But it's as soon as people see that, they buy the cars. It's pretty straightforward. So we'll be expanding the supercharger network quite substantially over time, and also enabling Tesla to use other high-speed charging networks. So you have like adapters for that. The key is like when you buy a car, you're buying freedom to travel, so you must have the superchargers, you must have high-speed charging. And then if the car breaks, it must be fixed quickly.
I know some people in Canada that are going to be very excited about that clip. All right, let's hear Elon talk about mobile service and just service in general. Before I start the clip, though, it is worth mentioning that Tesla did lay off some people in their service departments across the country at different service centers. All right, now let's listen to the clip.
I'm actually really excited about our mobile service. We have mobile service vans that will come fix your car as soon as it breaks down. It actually will immediately send a note to Tesla Mobile Service. We'll be on its way to fix the car. And so we trialed it in the Bay Area, and now I've extended it to the LA area and a number of others for tire repair. So we'll just come, the van will arrive, give you a new tire in half an hour, and you're on your way. It makes a huge difference. And we're adding things like bumper repair and minor collision repair. You know, if I look at the things that most trouble customers, it's like things like collision repair taking an eternity, and then a third-party body shop charging an arm and a leg after taking an eternity. So we're moving a lot of the body repair in-house at Tesla, and then even providing it on mobile service. And we just did our first bumper replacement from a mobile service van. So like, typically, collision repair can take weeks or months. In this case, it took less than an hour.
One of the things about owning a car I really don't care for is going to the service center. Service centers are revenue-generating profit centers for dealerships. So I always, in the back of my head, I have zero confidence that they're doing what's best for me or for my car. They're doing what's best for the dealership. Having said that, I know that not everybody's a crook out there, but I just don't trust them. And I do not care to go to the service center. I don't like sitting in their chairs. I don't like what they have on TV. I don't like their stale donuts. And it's boring. So being able to have a mobile service van come to my house, pull my car into the garage. They can work in the garage. They can be, you know, somewhat shaded in Arizona. And then they just take care of my problem while I'm at home hanging out with my kids or playing a game with my kids or whatever. That really appeals to me. And if I could just have my wife experience that one time, I really feel like we'd have a Tesla in the garage tomorrow. You know, aside from the fact of the financing and paying for it. Okay, rant over. Elon's going to give us an update on the Tesla pickup. And I'm going to combine two clips here because the Tesla pickup clip is kind of short. He's also going to talk about the Tesla Semi, battery cell production, and some other stuff. So I'm just going to put those together. Here we go.
Then the pickup truck, which we hope to unveil hopefully this summer. We spent a lot of time on designing the pickup truck. Like, I think it's the coolest car I've ever seen, to be frank. I think not everyone may share that opinion, but worst case scenario, we'll build a normal looking truck. Yeah, no problem. We know what those look like. This is something that'll, if you're driving it down a road, it looks like it came out of a sci-fi movie. So it'll be really cool, I think. And then the Semi, which we look forward to getting into production, you know, hopefully towards the end of next year. A lot of this also is dependent on our ability to manufacture a lot of cells and make a lot of battery packs. There's not much point in adding product complexity if we don't have enough batteries. then it's complexity but without gain. We're matching the product rollout according to a scaling of battery production. That's really the main limiting factor. And then as we scale battery production to very high levels, we actually have to look further down the supply chain. We might get into the mining business. I don't know. Maybe a little bit at least. But we'll do whatever we have to ensure that we can scale at the fastest rate possible. To this point, we are going to have a battery and powertrain investor day that's hopefully this summer, before the end of the year for sure. Because I think this is a big deal. I mean, I think if I were an outside investor, I would really focus on two things. What is the timeline to full self-driving? And what is your plan to scale and battery production and get the cost per kilowatt hour lower? Those are, it's basically battery cells and full self-driving. Those are the two strategic things that are of most importance.
I'm really looking forward to seeing what they have in store for the Tesla pickup truck. I am very excited about this. In terms of not releasing new products until they can solve for that battery constraint, that makes a lot of sense. And getting into mining, that also makes a lot of sense. The market is about to get a lot more crowded with VW and all these other companies that are making electric vehicles. And those ingredients that you put into, you mix into the batter to come out with an electric vehicle cake, those are going to become a lot more difficult to get your hands on as these companies are going in to these mining operations. And they're like, we'll buy the next 5 years worth of whatever it is you're mining. And by the way, here's a dump truck full of money. So you belong to us now. All right. In our next clip, Elon's going to briefly talk about Maxwell technology.
What aspects of battery production will integration Maxwell have? We think this is really quite strategic, but we'll leave the details of this to battery and powertrain investor day. There's some very important technologies there that I think will have a big effect on the cost and scaling of cell production, both reducing the cost and reducing the capital required to scale cell production.
The IP that Tesla got when they bought Maxwell Technologies, that may be what also pushes the next car, the next Model S or Model Y or Model 3 to over 400 miles range. All right, Elon's going to talk about Advanced Summon.
We do actually have Advanced Summon out in early access right now, and we're making steady improvements to it. It's close to being amazing. It's not quite there, but it's close. There's a lot of complexity in parking lots, turns out. You know, it would be very easy if you were like on open ground and you summon the car and it just drive to you. That's no problem. But if you've got to navigate through a parking lot and you're effectively going through a maze with a lot of obstacles and people moving and cars moving, that's quite tricky. But it's close to being magical. I feel good about this going to wide release fairly soon.
You want it to be good. I mean, that's the simplest answer. It's got to be awesome.
It's got to be awesome and super safe. You know, we don't want to like run anyone over or that would be bad. So, man, it's tricky. Like if you make the car really sensitive, then it just, you know, goes paranoid and then doesn't move. and then you don't want to make it too aggressive. That's bad too. And really, the threshold is it more convenient to summon your car or walk to your car? And if it's more convenient to walk to your car, summon is not that useful. So it has to move reasonably fast, certainly faster than you could just walk there.
I'm not sure if I had a Tesla that I would ever use Advanced Summon, if I'm being honest, because typically when we go to the mall or the grocery store, I try and park, you know, a little bit further away so I get a little bit more walking in. Not always. Sometimes it's really hot outside and I try to park as close as humanly possible. Maybe I'd use it in those situations. It's interesting when he was talking about trying to solve for an overly timid self-driving car versus an overly aggressive self-driving car, because that's really what Advanced Summon is, just a small step towards full autonomous driving. All right, our next clip is going to be pretty short. Elon's going to talk about Tesla insurance.
Then what status of Tesla insurance? We're pretty close to being able to release that. We have a small acquisition that we need to complete and a bit of software to write, but it won't be long before we release that.
And I wonder if that acquisition is going to be Root Insurance, which is currently my insurance for my cars now. I bet it is. Elon's going to talk again about the pickup truck event and then some other minor details we've already heard.
Pickup truck event probably sometime this towards the end of summer would be my guess. Like, we're trying to create something here that is really new and not just derivative of all the other vehicles on the road. And we try to create something new, and it's not just basically a copy of the form factor of everything else, but you still want it to be great. It's very hard. This is a very hard thing. Our goal here is to have something that's more functional than an F-150, which is a great truck and tough-selling vehicle in the U.S., but then also a better sports car than a basic 911. So that's a hard one. But like, it's physically possible, so I think we can do it.
Like I said, we've heard a lot of that stuff before, but I know we have some new listeners to the podcast, so I just kind of threw it in there. It wasn't that long of a clip. Somebody asks Elon about Starlink and Tesla. If you don't know, Starlink is SpaceX's project to bring internet to areas that are underserved. And Elon has some good answers as to why Starlink may not be on Tesla's in the near future anyway.
Do you think Tesla could rely on SpaceX's Starlink? I think we would have to have a different antenna for Starlink, because the Starlink antenna is, I think it's actually probably the most advanced phased array antenna in the world, including military. It's about the size of a medium pizza. So it would be fine for trucks and RVs and airplanes and any kind of like a house or a business or something like that. But it would look a little odd on the roof of a sedan. So I think, but we could make a smaller antenna and maybe use it. But I think most likely we would continue to rely on the cellular networks. The value of Starlink, the main value of Starlink, is providing low latency, high bandwidth access to sparse and moderately sparse, relatively low density areas, basically rural or semi-rural areas, places that don't have connectivity right now. So I think it's like quite a great system, but it's, you know, it's probably able to serve like 3 to 5% of people in the world. Now that's a lot of people because of all the people in the world, but it's actually not ideal for high density cities. It's really to serve the unserved or poorly served is what Starlink's about.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little bit disappointed. I was hoping that I could put a Starlink antenna on top of my house and get affordable high-speed internet. Because right now, I have Cox. I'm not unhappy with Cox. However, I think they charge too much. Elon's going to talk about demand, growth, and profitability in this next clip.
So we feel good about demand. That's not a major issue. Profitability is always challenging if you're a fast-growing company. I think that the scale at which Tesla is growing is hard to appreciate. But I mean, last year we doubled our fleet. Like, so we made as many cars last year as we had in our entire history. And this year, you know, it's going to be like pretty like similar, at least sort of 60 to 80% growth of the total vehicle fleet, maybe more than that. So it's hard to be profitable with that level of growth. You could slow down, but then that would not be good for sustainability and, you know, the cause of electric vehicles and solar and storage and all that. But I think we can be cash flow positive despite having a very high growth rate.
Yeah, I mostly agree with that. I don't have a lot to add to that last clip. Next, Elon's going to talk to us about robo-taxis with human drivers, so it wouldn't necessarily be robo, would it? Let's hear.
What about an update for like rideshare? I guess like so we could kind of practice a rideshare fleet with people, and then that would be good for figuring out things for the robo-taxi fleet in the future. This might make sense. I mean, we'll probably do something like this. Probably makes sense. Sort of a supervised robo-taxi.
Just like Waymo's doing. A autonomous car with a safety driver. All right, our next clip is about Gigafactory 3, and more specifically, why does Tesla limit itself to 500,000 cars per year out of that factory?
Tony Mazzapelli, shareholder. China is a place where there's a lot of car action right now. There's a lot of volume over there, a lot of growth markets, and they have 60% of the EVs. So I want to ask you about the Giga 3 project and its goal. The building that you're building is a Fremont-scale operation, maybe a little bit bigger, and last year you said it was 500,000 units per year target. That seems a little bit low to me because...
Okay. Sure, I think it probably
for a company for a country like China, and that would give us like 29% if the other players, providers, product sellers stay still, which they won't. Also, if we're at volume, going to higher volume, we learn more, get the cost down. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. Also, we connect up with the supply chain, which is very powerful over there. You know, advanced car electronics, batteries, Panasonic, Cattol, Samsung, LG, people like that. On the demand side, with no import fees, our cars compare very well to all the other products.
Yes.
And the Chinese like Tesla style, luxury, quality, range. So, and plus they need help getting rid of smog in their cities. So, and maybe we could even export from that factory to other Asian factories. So why was the target set at 500? Do you think in China we are being aggressive enough?
Oh, man. Have you seen how fast that China factory has been built?
Yes.
I mean, I've never
seen
anything.
2 months or less.
I've never seen anything built so fast in my life. It is pretty epic.
Nothing has ever been built so fast.
Oh. Why not two?
Yeah, okay, so... okay. We can't spend money too fast, you know. We'll run out of it. There's like... I mean, I think like long-term, that factory will probably do more than 500,000. So there's sort of like an interim goal. Maybe it does 1 million or more long-term. But then probably we should look at maybe having... Like China's pretty big geographically. So it may make sense to have factories in other parts of China in order to reduce logistics costs. A very big impact on the capital efficiency of any company is the time from when you receive raw materials to you building the product and then getting the product to the end customer. And so if you can compress that time to where ideally, in an ideal circumstance, you receive the payment for the car before you have to pay for all of the ingredients of the car, then the faster you grow, the more capital you have. So it is very important to localize the product production and have the supply chain be close by and for everything to move really fast. Because then you can actually scale, and the faster you scale, the more cash you have. Whereas the counterpoint is if you have to pay for all of the ingredients long before you get paid for the car, which is currently true for cars that are outside the U.S., because we have to put them on a boat, go through customs, then transport them within Europe and China. So our non-U.S. production is challenging from a cash flow standpoint, because we have to pay for everything long before we get paid for the car. And so a big advantage of the local production in China and Europe will be solving for that cash flow gap.
I know that was a really long clip, but I thought that it provided some really good information and insight. And obviously the person asking the question is pretty well informed, so I just kind of left it all in there. Our next question comes from a horse owner, and they want to know the towing capacity of the Tesla pickup truck. And I want to know it too.
My question for you is, as a horse owner, I'm wondering what the towing capacity for the truck.
Sure. I didn't mean to insult horses earlier, by the way.
No, it's fine.
horses are cool. It's designed to meet or exceed an F-150. So if an F-150 can tow it, then the Tesla pickup truck should be able to do it.
Yeah, if you look at the Rivian R1T, the towing capacity on that pickup truck is real close to what an F-150 is. It's either a little over or a little under. I can't remember what the exact number is. All right, in our next clip, it's going to be kind of long, but Elon's going to give us an update on full self-driving.
Hi, Elon. My name is Caleb Elson. I recently got my Model 3, and I'm happy it has Hardware 3 in it. So I watched the Investor Day for Autonomy, and you talked a lot about the FSD chip, the neural network, but you didn't talk much about the gap between navigate on autopilot today to the end of 2019. I was wondering if you could geek out a little bit on where we're going to go from now till December, January, February, feature-wise. Is that already running in your cars, like the demo, and we're going to cherry-pick it? Or what gives you the confidence that feature-complete, not hands-off, but feature-complete is possible? And what can you excite us a little bit about what that's going to be like? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I when I drive like the latest development version of the software, it can take me from my house to the office, but there are interventions at times. So it doesn't perfectly deal with every intersection. or every turn. I think it's possible to, one could obviously just game the system and just make it perfect for a particular route, but then that's just going to work on that route, and then if that route changes or there's a construction, then it won't work. So it's very hard to come up with a general solution. So when one reads about these other self-driving car companies, the issue is that they have very specific solutions, but they're brittle. They rely on very high-resolution maps, a lot of LiDARs, high-precision, really expensive GPS and inertial measurement, but even then it's just not a general solution. If they go off the route that they're used to, they don't work. So when we release something, we're releasing it to 500,000 cars and all over the world. And so it has to be a general solution. Our progress may appear slower than it actually is, relative to others that are developing self-driving technology. But in fact, I think it is quite a lot more advanced, because any element that we release is a general solution.
There's also like a plateau that you will reach taking the alternative approach that. Just having experienced with the team a lot of the work ahead of the investor day, the trajectory is crazy, especially with the advanced compute capability that we have. So that's my personal comment on it, I guess.
Yeah. And we learn a lot of, in terms of what we should retrain the neural net to do. And then once we discover, we need to train it to, we need a net that's going to really effectively recognize curves, for example. And previously, we trained the net on free space. So it's now free space is just anything you can drive on that's not going to destroy the car. But this is not comfortable if you're just driving on dirt, or the car just drives over the grass, and technically yes, but this is going to be disturbing. Road edge and curb are two training nets that we are developing right now to say this is independent of drivable free space. So you want to know what drivable free space is for an emergency. So if you need to go on the shoulder of the road to avoid something, then drive free space is important. But then you also need to know where does true road space end, because it's undesirable to go past true road space, and then especially for parking lots and tight corners, just recognizing curbs. These little details they're very important. I have most of this working in the development version that's on my car. I have actually two dev branches, one for enhanced summon and one for full self-driving, and two different cars. But it would not be good to release that to the general public, I think, quite yet.
So that's some good information about the challenges of where full self-driving is at the moment, at least in the beta and alpha channels that Elon's using. Our next clip is a little interaction between Elon and a PETA representative. And actually, I thought it was a pretty entertaining interaction.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Jennifer Baer, and I'm here on behalf of PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
Okay. Hi. The steering wheel.
Hi. Yes, the steering wheel. You got it. So during last year's annual shareholder meeting, you assured us that the Model Y, quote, would not have any leather in it, including in the steering wheel, if it does have a steering wheel, end quote. We have tried confirming this privately, but have been met with silence, and the website does not specify. It's also our understanding that all current Tesla models come standard with a leather steering wheel and need to be special ordered to be vegan.
That's true, currently.
As you know, the United Nations reports that animal agriculture, which includes the leather industry, is responsible for more greenhouse gas emissions than all of the world's transportation combined. The Higg Index has found that in terms of water scarcity, climate change...
Okay, I got it. I totally agree. I actually asked this question of my team earlier this week, and I believe we're close to having a non-heated steering wheel that's not leather. There are some challenges when we heat the non-leather material, and also how well it wears over time. So a steering wheel, there's like, it actually really needs to be very hardy, because there's a lot of like, we have a lot of basically oil and sweat and stuff on our hands. It gets kind of nasty if you don't have like the right surface treatments on the material. Mm-hmm. So it's an easier proposition to solve it for seats than it is for the steering wheel. So it's actually a remarkable amount of effort to solve for the steering wheel, but it is a thing that we're working on and hope to release soon.
That's fantastic. So can you confirm the Model Y will be vegan as promised?
Yes, I can. It will.
And that all of Tesla's models will be free of animal products by next year's shareholder meeting?
I'm not, you know, there might be the tiniest bit left, but I'm not sure. But Model Y, Model 3, I think I'm confident about that. We have a lot of things to solve, but I think we can for sure the Model Y and the Model 3 soon, and then you can also special order for the S and X.
Try as she might, she still couldn't get Elon nailed down to any sort of commitment there, but I do think that Tesla does care about this issue, and they are trying for sure. In the next clip, Elon talks about how he feels about advertising and whether Tesla will advertise in the future.
And that is, you've expressed your frustration. I think we're all frustrated with the media narrative around Tesla. And you've expressed your frustration in refuting some of the false information out there. You know, there's another alternative to that, which is to proactively advertise. And my question to you is, are there any thoughts to revisiting the advertising decision? Thank you.
Sure. Well, yeah, as I was saying, like, currently we are selling more cars than we can make. So it is not, then spending money on advertising would make things worse financially. And sure, it would probably increase demand, but we're selling more cars than we can make. So that's it's not a thing that's necessary right now. And we're trying to make as many cars as possible. And I think, like, advertising, like, generally, like, I've had an aversion to advertising because it's just too much trickery in advertising. You know, there's a lot of false association where, like, they'll have, like, a bad product and then put it in a nice environment with good-looking people and then, like, trick you into buying it is, like, common. And you know, and then some of the advertising can be quite strident, so it just tends to be sort of bad. So I don't like advertising for that reason. But we could have advertising as information to refute some of these issues. Yes. It's tricky though, because if you have an ad that says, "Look, our cars don't catch on fire," this is BS. Then they like people might think, are your cars actually catching on fire? Like, what's going on? Because there's so much trickery in advertising. Like, maybe the opposite thing is happening. Well, I wouldn't say that we're against advertising forever. It hasn't been necessary thus far. We'll definitely give this some thought. There's some good suggestions. Thank you.
I feel real confident that Tesla's not going to advertise anytime in the near future. Their demand's high. Elon really doesn't care for advertising. It costs money to advertise, which means you got to raise the cost of your vehicles in order to cover the advertising costs. So it just doesn't make sense in Tesla's near future to me. In our final clip, Elon's going to talk about a new Tesla product that probably won't see the light of day, but I'm sure many of you have heard about it if you read the blogs, but it's still exciting. Let's listen.
I have a really exciting question. Will Tesla make a quad cars, and if so, when?
Do you mean like a quad bike or something? What do you mean a quad car?
Aquatic car is in
aquatic.
A boat or submarine that's a car.
Oh, I see. Okay. Do you mean a car that can go in the water, basically?
On or under or both the water.
It's funny you should mention that. We do actually have a design for a submarine car, like the one from The Spy Who Loved Me, the sort of the Lotus that turns into a sub. And I actually, I thought that was like the coolest thing I'd seen in a movie, so I actually have that, the ones from the movie. Now that one cannot actually transform, because it has like fins where the wheels are. This is obviously not going to work. But if you make it a bit bigger, then you can actually have a submarine car. It's like technically possible. I think the market for this will be small. small but enthusiastic. So, but we actually do have a design for a submarine car. But like that would be crazy. It'd be difficult. It would not be. It would be a bit of a distraction, I think. So, but maybe we'll make one as a show car at some point. That'd be really fun. So, thank you. Thanks, everyone.
If I had to put a price on a Tesla car / submarine, I'm going to put that somewhere between $150,000 and $300,000. It'll probably never see the light of day, but it's neat that they're thinking about it, for sure. All right, that's the whole show, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. If you want to email me, you just email me, Bodie, B-O-D-I-E, at 918digital.com. Again, if you want to support the show on Patreon, go to patreon.com/kilowatt or supportkilowatt.com. Either way, it'll get you there. And follow me on Twitter, at 918digital, if you want to. All right. Everybody have a great week, and I will talk to you next Friday.